Welcome, ye landlubbers, to a new episode of Trek Swap. The salty sea awaits the souls of the most daring adventurers and can't wait to grace your ears with some terrific tunes. But Captain Lasefogt is not alone. A very capable seaman accompanies him on this journey, the fearless Edmund Meinert.
Aye, matey, it be good to be swabbing the deck with ye again.
I should stop doing this. I sound like a drunk Russian. What an intro, but welcome back, my dear friend. I am so happy that you are joining me once again.
Yeah, it's so good to be back. It's been a while, man. Looking forward to talking some good tunes with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, this specific one was your idea.
Yeah, that's right. It was. I think it was just in the post-show chat that we had last time, and I was just casually talking about how I'd been listening to the main theme from Black Sails a lot recently and how much I liked it, and then we just kind of came onto this idea that we'd do some talking about some nautical scores.
More of a non-Howard Shore Lord of Rings soundtracks chat has been postponed, but it will happen eventually. In this specific case, fire your cannons, what do you have for us?
So yeah, I have brought with me today, the powder that I've loaded up my pistols with is Bear McCreary's Black Sails.
It is indeed. So, how did you come across this specific tune, and why do you like it so much?
This score, actually, the interesting thing is I was only familiar with the main theme for many, many years, and it was only quite recently in preparation for this show that I listened to the rest of it, because the main theme had just caught my ear. I think I had read a review of it. It might have been James Southall's review over at Movie Wave. And I was so intrigued by the description of the main theme that I'd had to go check it out on YouTube or something, and I was just really taken with it. I think it's one of the most fun and creative and clever kind of creations of Bear McCreary's career, and it's one of my most listened pieces by him ever. And I'm not sure why it took me so long to get around to listening to the rest of it, but yeah, let's talk about that main theme for a bit, because it's really quite something special.
Yeah, it really is. I actually already talked about this theme, at least about the shortened opening titles version, on a special episode of Fans About Films a few years ago, where I had John Brown as a guest, and we introduced our favorite TV themes to each other, and it was basically a hidden pilot for Trek Swap in a way. And Black Sails was one of my picks, because I love it so bloody much.
Yeah, man, it's such a cool thing. I'll do my film music critic talk, just get it out of the way here now. I feel like if you're a film music fan and you're thinking about pirates, there's kind of two schools of thought, generally speaking, that these things fall into. Like you're either Errol Flynn or you're Johnny Depp, right? You're either Korngold or you're Hans Zimmer.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like so much about Black Sails is that it's neither. It really is finding a new way to do pirate music, which is instantly recognizable as pirate music, but in a way that is nothing like the pirate music that is most famous in film music. And I think with that kind of film score fan tunnel vision that I think we can get sometimes, we forget that the average kind of person doesn't think of Korngold or even Hans Zimmer when they think about pirate music. You know, they think about sea shanties. They think about something that's closer to like the ride music from Pirates of the Caribbean, from like the Disneyland ride, you know, yo ho yo, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think what McCreary has done, which is so cool, is he's taken kind of the basic elements of that, and he's put a really modern and gritty and adult spin on it, but in a way that isn't boring and dreary. And I think, because I think a lot of the times when composers claim they're putting a modern spin on things, that it kind of just ends up being a drone, but this could not be any further from that. It is so, it's so vivid, it's so colorful, it's so alive, but it's not your kids' Pirates of the Caribbean ride music at all. It's very much, you know, you can almost taste the salt in it.
You really can. Yeah, you exactly said what I was basically thinking about it, that it's neither one style of pirate music we're used to nor the other. He puts his own spin on it, and he succeeds with flying colors. This has nothing to do with other preceding pirate scores. It's totally unique, and it's quintessentially Bear. It's so him.
Exactly. It's like he took a look at kind of the expected courses of writing pirate music, and he was like, there be a third course, mateys.
it's kind of like, I think, what Giacchino did in a way for his Batman score. In a certain way, where it's like he's not like totally doing something from scratch, but instead he kind of combines certain things which work, but still has his own voice. And also, what's so great about the Giacchino main Batman theme is that he hammers it home pretty much from the beginning. Like, it's featured so much in the film, and it's kind of like his statement saying, like, this is my Batman theme, and god fucking damn it, you won't forget it.
That's definitely true. Yeah, and I think I hadn't thought of that comparison, but I agree with you. I think that's something that Giacchino did really well with the Batman. And I'm not the biggest fan of that score. I think it gets old about a quarter of the way in. But I can't deny that Giacchino did manage to chart that third course in a similar way. And what you say about him hammering the theme home, if there's a criticism I would have of the Black Sails score overall, it's that McCreary has this great main theme, and he doesn't use it in the score itself, like, at all.
Yeah, no, he keeps the style, he keeps the instrumentation, but that theme is pretty much reserved to the main titles alone. In some tracks, you can kind of hear, like, a slower kind of changed version of it, where you can still think, oh yeah, this is some elements of a theme, but for the most part he just keeps the style and the instrumentation, and I don't think that's really a fault of the score. And I don't know, I've only seen the first season, so I don't know how him and his team, how they develop it further when the series goes on. Like, maybe like big kind of like heroic versions of that theme, they happen much later, because the first season is so much like setting the characters up and all of that, and pretty much everybody tries to betray each other and all of that, like typical pirate fashion. So I don't know if there maybe are like more heroic main title versions in future seasons, but so I can speak for that. But yeah, you're absolutely right in this like first full album score. That's certainly something that might be a downgrade for some people.
Yeah, it's true. He carries over quite a bit of the instrumentation, although not all of it, I would have to say. There are some elements that are only really heard in the main title. But let's talk about that instrumentation for a bit, because like, I really think this is one of the strengths of the score, and I think it's one of McCreary's greatest strengths as a composer, is the ensembles he chooses for his scores and what a distinctive sound that creates for them. Like, this guy works on so much stuff. He's one of the busiest people in the industry. He Yes. writes a frankly absurd amount of music, and yet he is, for all that, he's pretty good at making each thing sound distinctive. And of course, you know, he has a style of his own, and you can hear things from one score to another that sound pretty familiar. But mostly kind of in the harmonic and melodic writing. I mean, he also has his favorite instruments. Like, I mean, take a shot of rum every time you hear McCreary use a hurdy-gurdy.
It's featured in quite a few scores, and that's something that is the only thing, basically, that disappointed me about the Rings of Power score was I was listening to it like, where's the hurdy-gurdy? Why didn't he use it in this?
Like, surely he'll find a way. There's like 15 themes in that score. There's got to be a hurdy-gurdy in at least one of them.
Never.
But no, I don't think there is. I think you're right.
The only solo instrument he doesn't use in that whole score. Maybe it's something for a future season. For some type of character, I don't know, it might be a fun instrument when Tom Bombadil eventually shows up.
Yeah, he's saving it for Tom Bombadil.
That would be amazing. But yeah, that was basically just my only downgrade in that case. But yeah, whenever he uses the hurdy-gurdy, something magical happens. And
the hurdy-gurdy is the very, very first thing you hear in this score.
Yeah, and even then, the very first sound, it's actually just him kind of winding up the hurdy-gurdy. It happened to be broken. It made that sound, so he quickly recorded it, and that became the quintessential, like, ground sound of the whole thing.
Oh, that's so cool. I actually didn't know that. That's great. That's creative, right? Use everything you've got, even if it's broken.
Yeah, yeah, that weird wailing sound, the very first thing we hear, that's actually something that originally wasn't supposed to be there. That's basically the hurdy-gurdy being broken and him kind of like testing it out.
Yeah, and like the whole main title, it has kind of a broken feel to it, doesn't it? Like, it's not clean at all. The instruments are a little bit out of tune. Like, let's talk about the piano for a second. Like, how cool is that piano sound?
Yes. Oh, that's so menacing and wonderful. It stylistically, it very much reminds me of what Hans Zimmer did with his Sherlock Holmes scores.
Yeah, actually, that's true. Yeah, a little bit of the weird kind of detuned instruments.
And
everything's
like
a little bit
honky-tonk type of piano play here and there. I actually think there was kind of like a story where Hans Zimmer basically took that piano and he threw it downstairs. And what was left of it, that he used to record the Sherlock Holmes score.
Too. But yeah, every time that low piano chord comes in the kind of the introduction to the Black Sails theme, I can't help but think of Captain Hook playing the piano in Shrek 2. Just like slamming his hook into that piano.
I like my town with a little drop of poison.
Excuse me?
Do I know you?
No, you must be mistaking me for someone else.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison. And even though this theme contains a lot of like period-appropriate instrumentations, it's still a very modern piece with a rocking edge to it, which gives it a contemporary feeling.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's got almost like a little bit of a pirate metal feel. You know, it's pretty, you know, it's a tame kind of film music version of that. But still, you know, you've got this hurdy-gurdy, this random Eastern European instrument. You've got electric guitars that come in later on and just give it kind of that grit and down in the bass. You've got your detuned piano, and then you've got these vocals that come in, right? And it's kind of like it's halfway between sea shanty and like almost kind of rock-edged, harsh. I don't want to say screamo because it's not anything close to that, but you know, it's heading in that direction.
Yeah, and Bear McCreary is one of the singing voices in this.
Of course he is.
It's like a group of like four or five people. And yeah, and he's one of those voices. And that stuff is just so great. And in terms of like the kind of like rock elements, that's the one thing that kind of carries over from the Hans Zimmer mentality for the pirate music. Because there also they had this idea of making it basically like a pirate rock type of score, at least with like certain elements and characters, and that's the one thing that's kind of comparable between the two approaches. And in this one, I think they take it even like a little bit further in a way, at least in certain instances when you can hear like the electric guitar and like a modern drum kit basically. And that's the type of stuff that makes it stand out in a way, and where you think, okay, this is not like authentic music, but it has like period appropriate elements, and combining the new with the old has a very certain appeal, and I'm quite fond of that type of stuff.
Yeah, it's anachronistic, but like in the right way. It's done with intent, it's purposeful. He's got like a sound that he's going for. He wants it to sound kind of modern, but at the same time really organic and scrappy, like it's actually something you could imagine a pirate crew just playing on the ship. Yeah. If they had electricity for the amplifiers on an 18th century ship, then this is what they would play.
Oh yeah, they would certainly find a way. Pirates were quite inventive back in that time. In terms of like the Black Sails main theme, in my humble opinion, it's one of the best TV main themes of our time.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think the only reason why it isn't talked about as such is because the show is not that well known.
Yeah, and that could actually change, because in a very short amount of time, it's going to be on the US Netflix.
Ah.
It's going to go over there, so that might expose it to a bigger audience. And maybe have it like some sort of like post show run revival and appreciation. Because it's certainly something, when it came out, it was something that I was aware of. But it was also something I didn't particularly seek out. Actually, my brother and his now wife, they introduced me to the show properly. And were kind of like, hey, we watched the first season. Go ahead and watch this with us. This is really cool. And so I watched like the first few episodes, and then I watched the first season on my own, and I was very thankful, because it's really a really cool series, at least as far as I've come now. And my brother actually told me that the first season in retrospect is the weakest one, because it just gets better and better, and that it's really encouraging. Did you ever watch the show?
I've actually seen only the first season.
Okay.
I had heard that the first season is a bit slow. And that it really kind of ramps up the more like kind of this the swashbuckling in
yeah.
later seasons, but I never got around to watching them.
Yeah, it's really also an interesting approach, like making this like a quasi prequel to the Treasure Island characters, which is just so unusual.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess that is one of the most famous pirate stories that there is. And it's a clever way, I suppose, to kind of borrow some of the iconography from that while being able to tell their own story.
I absolutely agree.
Like everyone's heard of Long John Silver, right?
Yes, and this is him before he's the Long John Silver.
Yeah.
But at least like people who are like personally like people who are familiar with the book and have no idea, and they start the show and then they hear those certain names, I think they're gonna be, wait a minute.
Wait a minute, he was in Treasure Planet.
Why doesn't he have a
He was
robot
a
arm?
cyborg. Yeah, where's
Where's the pink blob?
Yeah, where's the cat lady captain?
That's the thing I wanted to say. Oh, you beat me
Ah,
to it.
Treasure Planet, man. We gotta talk about Treasure Planet one day. What an underrated movie.
Oh, that's also a future track swap episode in the making. But yeah, I guess that's it for the Black Sails main theme.
Sure, but do you want to talk about the other piece, or do you want to go first?
No, absolutely. Like, talk about the other piece you brought to the table. This is actually one I kind of nudged you towards because we were struggling figuring out, what other track should I bring if I bring another track? And I recommended this one. And then after a certain while, you went with it. So please tell us why, except for, by my charming suggestion, why did you decide to go with this one?
Yeah, so you had suggested this piece, The Parson's Farewell, and when you suggested that, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. That's probably the best piece in this score outside of the main theme, in my opinion, anyway. But I wanted to give the album another listen and see maybe if I wanted to talk about something else that is maybe a little bit different stylistically, because I think it is also the piece that is most similar kind of in style and structure to the main theme. Then I listened to it again and I was like, you know what, this is too cool to not talk about. So yeah, so The Parson's Farewell. Now this piece, it kind of starts out as like this sort of pirate jig thing, although I don't think it's technically a jig because it's not in a compound meter. It's not in like 6/8 or anything. It's in four. I unfortunately lack the knowledge to say what kind of a dance it is, but it definitely sounds like a dance from the Baroque period of music, so from like the early 18th century, which is the period in which this show is set.
And actually, it is, because this is not a original Bear piece. This is actually an old folk song he remade.
Ah, okay, that explains it. See, I didn't know that.
That's why it sounds so authentic early on, because this is pretty much, this is an old folk piece which he kind of like stumbled upon. And when I listened to this piece originally, I didn't know that either. And then I did some research, and he even did like a video special about it, how he was kind of like, yeah, this is my idea, and we found the song, and then we changed it up a bit and made it our own. And that's basically, yeah, what he did.
Yeah, so like it starts out kind of with, the smaller instrumentation, that's a little bit more period authentic. Like there's a fiddle in there, the accordion comes in. I think it's the only time you actually hear an accordion in the entire score, and
Might
that's,
be.
that's like the pirate instrument for the general public, right?
Thank you.
then, of course, it builds up and things. You know, he brings back the rock percussion. He brings back the electric guitars, and then things just get really fun.
So incredibly fun. Like when I watched the first season and it came to this moment, and it's a very, very big, important moment in the story, I was immediately captivated. And I actually watched this specific scene a few days ago with one of my brothers, the one who introduced the show to me. And he said to me that this scene was one of his favorite musical moments of the show as well. And yeah, my God.
It's definitely one of those pieces of music where, like, even if you're listening to it out of context, you're like, okay, this is a moment where the music is really driving things. This is a big moment where the music is allowed to, like, rise to the forefront and kind of make the scene. And man, boy, did he ever take advantage of that to the best
yeah.
way.
It takes quite a while to ramp up. It kind of gives us that feeling of safety, so to speak, where it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is like a folksy, nice, dancey song. But then it comes down upon us with full might and pure coolness.
Oh yeah, and like just like with the main theme, like this is one of those pieces where it's like reminds me, yeah, this is one of the things I like most about listening to like film and TV and game music. Like, where else are you gonna hear an 18th century Baroque dance reimagined with like a drum kit and an electric guitar for pirates?
Yeah,
like, just also this genre cocktail is so intoxicating. I love it.
Genre cocktail, that's a perfect description. And also with a hurdy-gurdy back there again. Oh man, like I remember listening to this track over and over again for a long while. I never get tired of it. It's so much fun.
Yep, it's a good one. I guess it's kind of a shame that McCreary, after this first season, kind of stepped back from the show.
Yeah, I think after this, it's like the main theme is still there, but then for the most part, I think just kind of like his team took over, which sometimes happened with shows he worked on. Like, I don't know how long he was actually, like, directly involved with The Walking Dead. I mean, that was a show that went on for way too long. So,
oh,
and then, like, one of the shows that went on for a pretty long time, but he was still actively involved in until the end, was actually Outlander.
Right, we just got a new season of that this year.
Yeah, and I'm still waiting for that score because I have every other score CD of that show already in my possession, and I want my collection to be complete. But that is one of his most popular works for yeah, for good reason, of course. But yeah, I don't know in how many other instances he stayed with a show for this long. And I'm pretty sure like he didn't completely write it off. I still think he kind of worked as like the supervisor and made sure with everything.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I haven't watched the other seasons yet, so I don't know how the music kind of evolves or like how much actual new material there is there. I'm pretty sure there's quite a lot because he is the chaperone of a very, very creative and cool team. They are involved in a lot of stuff, and so I'm pretty confident that the music doesn't let us down in terms of quality.
I mean, if that's the case, then the shame of it is you'd never be able to enjoy it out of context because the later seasons of music from Black Sails have never been released.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's also just only like one score album of the whole like Walking Dead, pretty much. So I guess,
yeah, and that I remember how many years fans were really clamoring to get a release of that because it didn't come out until several years after the show had started airing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe in the future there's some sort of like collective release. That sounds dirty. Of the whole score experience of all of the seasons. Maybe it also had something to do with money, who knows? Like maybe it was just that the interest kind of faded in the show and then they didn't really actively try to release the music even though there was enough material. Who knows? Like this is something only the people involved truly know.
These days, you know, we get 6-hour releases for everything. And it's easy to forget that was not that, you know, that's a very recent development. Like as recently as I'd say like 10-15 years ago, probably it was the exception rather than the rule when a TV score got a release at all.
Yeah, that's certainly something that that has changed nowadays. I'm actually very like some people actually are kind of clamoring for a more like compressed release, but in my humble opinion, if you want to put all of your music out there, please go for it, and so I can sift through it. That is much more preferable to me than something great being missing.
Oh yeah, for me, for I totally agree with you. Like I'm always gonna have the philosophy that too much is always better than too little, right?
Yeah,
You can always choose not to listen to something if you don't want to, but you can't choose to listen to something that's not available.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I still have some score reviews ahead of me of quite long albums. One of them is The Witcher Season 3, and the other one is the One Piece live action series.
It does make it a bit daunting if you want to actually explore a score to think like, okay, I got to set four hours aside to explore this. Like, there are only so many hours we have in the day.
Especially because I only have 400 words available to actually review that score.
Oh my gosh, it's like a word per minute.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty much the case because it's going to be for a magazine and they have a limit. So I have to be, I have to be very, very controlled. But I'm
that's
up to the challenge.
An exercise in concision, man. That's going to be really a challenge.
I already managed that with first season of The Witcher, which also had like a 3-hour release. So
same composers, right?
Yes, same composers. I actually interviewed them a few years ago.
Maybe one day we'll get the later seasons of Black Sails and we can see how that theme develops in the later seasons, if it does.
Yeah. Would be incredibly cool. But
I mean,
yeah.
I think it's a good sign. It's a good sign that the second season of Foundation was released, even though that was also a case of Bear kind of stepping back a bit and letting his team do kind of the moment-to-moment scoring more.
Oh, yeah, but that's also a series, you know, that, you know, people are still watching, and that's something that is on the mind of a lot of people. And I don't know how it was with Black Sails, but, I mean, they managed to get a few seasons out of that material, so some kind of money they have made.
One last thing I wanted to mention is that one of the producers on Black Sails is actually Michael Bay.
Yeah, it's through his kind of like company. It also has like his Andrew Form, Brett Fuller, like that producer trio. I think it's kind of like the Platinum Dunes people, but I don't think this is quite like a Platinum Dunes production. But yeah, it's sometimes that kind of stuff happens where people get involved with this kind of stuff. And you can, I don't know how much influence he had, but I think
yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if he was really creatively involved with the show at all. Certainly, and certainly I doubt whether he ever really had anything to say about the music.
Who knows? In terms of the look of the show, at least like in the first season, you can kind of tell, it's kind of like that weird look where it's kind of like it's kind of like a dirty, gritty show, but visually it looks a little too clean, kind of like a little too high def, and that's certainly something that is the case with quite a few Michael Bay films. So
Michael Bay, where everything looks weirdly shiny, and like the contrast of the colors is ridiculously high.
Yes, kind of like overlit in a way sometimes.
As long as there isn't like a helicopter flying into a sunset, I don't know how you'd get that into a pirate show, but Michael Bay would find a way if he was directing the thing.
Yes, he absolutely would. And yeah, and for people who are interested in the show, you know, it's not an easy to watch show in terms of content, because you know, it's a show about pirates, and pirates were a hard bunch. So it has dirty language, it has nudity, it has brutality, and some other stuff I rather wouldn't mention here. But it has really, really lively characters, and a world you can get lost in, with a rather intriguing plot. And I can't wait to explore what the rest of the show has to offer past the first season.
Oh yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's an adult take on pirates. I think it was trying a little bit to be kind of to pirates what Game of Thrones is to high fantasy.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't level that at it as a criticism necessarily. Like, I don't think he was trying to be an imitator to such a degree, but it was definitely kind of part of that, let's take this thing and make it a bit darker and grittier and more quote-unquote realistic.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely, that's a fair assumption without being actually critical. I think that's actually a pretty objective take.
Yeah, and considering that, though, I have to say, like, again, you know, I'll take my tricorn hat is off to Barry McCreary for managing to write music that is so lively and dynamic while still being dark and gritty. It can be done, composers. You don't have to be boring just because it's dark.
That is the best kind of takeaway from this. Barry McCreary is a very sought-after composer for a big reason, and scores like these prove why.
Oh yeah, the guy is talented as hell, and it's really been, it's been pretty gratifying to kind of see him slowly rise further and further through the industry, to the point where now he's scoring, like, you know, the most expensive show of all time, and massive AAA games, and the odd big blockbuster, although I'd like to see it happen a bit more often still.
Yeah, me too. He basically should.
He's slowly but surely, he's definitely establishing himself as one of the in-demand guys. And the good thing is, he scores 19 things a year, so you can, if you want him, you can probably get him.
Barry McCreary, Black Sails. Check it out. It's fun. Now, as soon as you said that you wanted to talk about Black Sails, I pretty much immediately knew which score I would like to pick as a companion piece. And actually, it was none other than Jonathan Broxton himself who kind of gave me that idea, because I discovered the score through his review of it, where he compared the main theme to the one of Black Sails.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah, and I'm talking about the miniseries Boundless. Currently available on Amazon Prime, at least in Germany, but I think pretty much worldwide. Originally titled Sin Limitis, I hope I didn't butcher this, and it's a Spanish series, and tells the story of a famous Magellan journey, which took place over 500 years ago, and I haven't finished it yet, but I've seen a few episodes.
Yes,
and it feels...
actually it took place pretty much exactly 500 years ago. It was in 1522, and the show was made last year, so
yeah.
It was for the 500th anniversary.
Incredible, like the timing on that. Well done. It feels very authentic, and the tone is very, very serious. And that also comes down to the music. It gives composer Federico Jusit the opportunity to shine, and the Argentina-born composer has established a very steady career for himself over the years, especially in the TV world, and also for non-Spanish projects like Ridley Scott's Exodus and Netflix's Watership Down, among them. Ridley Scott and his weird composer things.
Ridley Scott is such a strange enigma. I would say there's no director who's more hostile to composers, but who has somehow still inspired so much great film music.
Yeah, it's really quite an interesting... It's kind of like he's like the monkey's paw of directors when it comes to film music.
Yeah, he'll let you write great stuff. You just won't hear any of it in the movie.
That's so weird. But... back to Boundless. As Jonathan Broxton already realized, the main theme of it is certainly similar to the one of Black Sails, but only in terms of certain instrumental ideas. It's both elegant and grungy, with period-appropriate Renaissance-style orchestrations, but also modern electronic and percussion elements, which give it a modern edge. But not only that, the opening and closing with a strange drowning sounds, like the droning sounds mixed with scratchy strings, give the whole thing a level of darkness. These men venture out into the unknown, and those musical elements which open and close the track are, in my opinion, a perfect musical encapsulation of how dangerous and truly horrifying the open sea can be. The more elegant and adventurous tone in between those moments, that's just there to lure us in. And I think this mix works extremely well.
Of this score until you suggested it for the track swap.
Nice.
And I'm very glad you did, because I listened to that main title and it's pretty cool. But I'll admit, in those first 15 seconds where all you hear is that low droning synth that has kind of, it's got kind of that sinking feeling effect on it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh boy, what is this? This sounds like, I hope this doesn't go super modern, but it doesn't. He takes that, that's the foundation of it, right? That's the danger of the sea, that's the undercurrent. But then he builds on top of it this great kind of, it's more of an explicit jig kind of in, mm-hmm. it's got that 6/8, it's got that compound time, it's got that little swing to it. But it does still have those modern elements, that edge to it. And I immediately could see, like, I totally get why the comparison to Black Sails is apt here, because he is kind of doing a similar thing, but definitely in his own way.
It doesn't feel derivative at all. It still feels like a very original approach. And I think those opening notes, they are so scary. And so I think they actually would fit this exact kind of feeling. They should have used that type of music for like that miniseries, The Terror, which is a really good show. But it's kind of disappointing music-wise because they don't really do much in terms of score. But I think whenever I think of a Terror, like the opening titles of that show, I pretty much always think nowadays of this very theme, and kind of think, oh, this is so appropriate for this type of feeling in terms of like the sea, the lowering darkness, all the things that could happen there, and like the wide world ahead of you where nothing is fully explored yet. And I think the music overall captures that feeling so incredibly well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like what you said about kind of it's bookended with this menace, the unease, the unknown. But in the middle, you know, when it finally builds up and it gets to this section where it soars a bit, you know, it brings in some more varied harmony that kind of gives it that extra bit of juice. And that is kind of, that represents, I guess, the hope of the expedition and the excitement of discovering new things. And it, you know, it's, you get both at once, the excitement of the unknown, but also the fear of it.
Yeah, and then the very last part when it comes back to those like droning sounds, but they're still kind of like fading away, a last statement of the main melody, and that is something that really sells the whole feeling, and I think that's just so well done.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, so we've got droning synths and it's the 1500s. How do we feel about this? Is it anachronistic? Yeah, of course it is. So is having any orchestral instruments if it's the 1500s, by the way. It's all a question of application. It's a question of execution. Does it work or not? And that's obviously, it gets subjective or not. But I think a good composer will know how to pull it off. And Federico Chazid, who is a good composer, who I unfortunately am only familiar with two or three or maybe four scores of his, certainly pulls it off here.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This really shows his talent and the whole thing. It sounds daring and yet very menacing, and it's more than appropriate for the series and the subject matter. And I hope I hereby introduced it to many people who were not familiar with it yet, because it's certainly something to look out for in terms of music and also in terms of craftsmanship as far as the show itself goes.
Oh yeah, and maybe people who haven't heard anything by Federico Chazid before, because, you know, he's not exactly a household name. He's one of those composers who I feel like film music reviewers have kind of been trying to champion him for a long time. Like, I remember when people were talking about his score for Isabel back in like 2010 or 2011 or whenever that came out. That was when I first heard about him. And I feel like since then, he has managed to get some kind of more high profile assignments outside of Spain. But I feel like whenever he does, his music isn't as interesting.
That sometimes can happen. Like, I think like some people say that Roque Baños's stuff outside of Spain, like whenever he did something Hollywood, it wasn't as interesting as his other stuff. But I couldn't disagree more, because I think like his score for Evil Dead, the Evil Dead remake, was tremendous.
Oh yeah, that's a crazy score.
And a lot of people write off his In the Heart of a Sea score, but I think that's an incredibly strong work. That's certainly something that, where you can kind of feel that they're trying to fill in the shoes of Hans Zimmer, who had worked with Ron Howard in the few instances before, but I think it's so much more than just kind of like him trying to do the RCP style, because I think that's such a good score with such a pretty much monothematical for the most part, but he pulls it off so well and gives the movie a lot more heart than pretty much any other aspect of the film does. And that's something that's also going to be in a future track swap, because that's a score that deserves a lot more attention.
Yeah, that's not one actually that I can say that I've heard, but I have seen the movie, and I don't remember much about the score in context, but I definitely want to check it out. I think any score for a Ron Howard film deserves your attention. He tends to get pretty good scores, although in the recent years not so often, but...
What's the last movie he did?
He did that movie about the Thai kids trapped in the cave that had a Benjamin Wallfish score, I think. That was pretty ordinary.
Oh, really? That completely slipped by me.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the film off the top of my head. Here, let me look it up for a second.
One of the exceptions is Inferno, where the movie and score, I mean, they deserve each other because they're absolutely terrible.
13 Lives is the name of the film.
Ah, okay. No, in that case, I have heard of that.
But then on the other hand, you know, there's Solo. And don't get me started about Solo, because we'll be here 5 hours and I'll just be gushing about it forever.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. We won't even go there. It's good. We all know it's good.
Yes, absolutely. It's my favorite Star Wars score, period.
Oh, man. You know what? I wouldn't go that far, but it's top three.
I get it. I'm possibly the only person who thinks that, but for me, it's the best.
I respect the hell out of that opinion, though, man.
Thank you so much. But yeah, our journey over the thunderous seas has ended. I hope you, our crew, managed to survive and also learn from the experience. Edmund, let me thank you so much for your picks. You are always welcome back to grace this show with your wonderful presence.
Ah, thank you, Captain. Okay, I'm not going to do the pirate voice. But yeah, it's been great. It's always great, Lasse. I'm so glad that you invited me back, and I can't wait to get on board again and talk about some more great music with you.
I can't wait either. This wonderful show, dear listeners, you can listen to on CitrusOnTheater.com, but also on Fans About Films, also in German. I am also part of the German podcast network Telestammtisch, where we talk about the newest releases, and I have been on several other shows, including the Hallmarkies podcast, Rachel's Reviews. I've been on the Film Brain podcast for a few times, and on several other things. I co-host It's a 90s Christmas podcast with Lyle Perez, still on a break, but I hope you will be back soon, and I write German score reviews for scoregeek.wordpress.com. And now, without further ado, we will rest and afterwards prepare the ship for the next big musical adventure, which is already waiting for us beyond the horizon. I hope you, our marvelous crew, will join us once again when the time has come. Until then, thank you for listening and farewell. Arr! Arr!